Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's wonderful to have you company for another episode of our show. Now, one of the questions I get asked all the time is about oral health therapists. Should I get one? Are they productive? What's the business case? And I know that this generates a lot of conversation online. I know that there are some people who say, no, not now, not ever will I have an oral health therapist. And I know other people say, yes, I would like one. And others going, I'm not quite sure and are in between. So in this episode today, I want to unpack the business case for oral health therapists. I believe the oral health therapist can be an integral and incredibly important part of a team, but not only that, a very productive and profitable member of the team when done right. And this is the key, when done right. And my guest today is Sahil Bareja, who is an oral health therapist and a practice owner, and he's going to share with you how to do it right. He's going to share with you how to integrate therapy into a practice and make it profitable, productive, and enjoyable. We talk about building the team up, pushing the work down, and making sure that everyone is utilizing their full scope of the practice. And when you do that right, you're going to have therapists that bill $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a day, which is more than many, many associate dentists. But it's about doing it right, doing it ethically, and doing it with structure and purpose in mind. And so Sahil's going to share the inside secrets of that. Now, it's great to have a productive team. We all understand that. But it's also really important to make sure you've got a strong financial blueprint for your practice as well that takes into account your revenue generation, of course, your cash flow management, and then your wealth creation processes as well. And so what I want to share with you today is I'm running some training over the next couple of weeks, next Thursday night it is, and we're going to be talking about how to build your financial blueprint for 2023. So if you want to come and join us for that, we'd love to see you online. I'll put the link in the show notes below. And so come and register for that training. It's totally free. It's my gift to you for 2023. So come along and let's get your financial roadmap in place. Because here's the thing, having your finances in place is an incredibly important part of running a business. And not having finances in place is the number one reason why businesses fail in Australia. So let's make sure you are on the fast track to your success and your goals. Come and join us for that. And we look forward to helping you with it. But for now, let's talk about having a profitable and productive oral health therapist. And here's Sahil. Hey, Sahil, thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you today, mate?
Thank you very much, Jesse. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm really well, and I'm really excited to be talking to you. And we are talking on a Friday afternoon, evening. So I'm really grateful to you for taking the time out of your late Friday to come and talk to us. Mate, you are a fully qualified oral health therapist. You're also a practice owner. And you know, you've got a really interesting background. You are the most productive oral health therapist that I know. And of course, I want to explore that in depth today because I want to talk about oral therapy as a business model. I want to talk about oral therapy and how it really can integrate well into general practice and specialty practice. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of that, I'm always curious about the person.
Sure.
And I'd love to know a bit about your story, your background, how you came to this point to be a therapist, what drove you there, what inspired you to be in that role, and then into practice ownership on top of that.
Sure. Well, I come originally from a family of dentists. But when I was in Sydney, when I was studying, I was looking at all the courses options, and Bachelor of Oral Health option was available because postgrad dentistry is available in UCID. So I decided to do Bachelor of Oral Health initially thinking, oh, you know, this might be a good stepping stone towards dentistry. But then as I started studying into it and looking into it and started working, I realized I quite like the oral health therapy side of it. You know, of course, there's more options when you become a general dentist. You can expand your scope, but then also comes the added stress. So once I started exploring more and more oral health therapy field, I thought, you know, I actually quite enjoyed it. And as soon as the AlloScope extension came out, that was it. That's when I realized that this is my life career. So I did my Bachelor of Oral Health from University of Sydney.
Yep.
And just through continuing education, I got really, really interested in sleep medicine. So I went on to do my Master's of Sleep Medicine as well, because all of the patients that we're seeing, I noticed the bruxism was so high, a lot of sleep issues going on. So I wanted to stay up to date. And then basically just started working full time and met a dentist who I really, really clicked on with. Our ethics matched. And that's when the journey of practice ownership really started.
It's not a common tale where you see oral health therapists journey into practice ownership. And so firstly, I really love the fact that you have. You know, for some people, obviously the relationship has to be really tight. No matter whether you're two dentists in partnership or oral health therapists or a dentist in partnership or whatever the case may be, even in a personal relationship, marriages and all the rest of it, the dynamics have to be right. So I wanted to ask you a bit about the dynamics of your business partnership and how that works. And yeah, again, because there'll be dentists listening to this podcast, but there'll also be oral health therapists who might want to walk down the path that you've walked down. So I wanted to ask you how you navigate that relationship. How does it work in practice? What have been the really good things that you've learned? And again, you know, for someone thinking about that, what are the things they ought to consider?
Sure. When I was working in private practice full time, there were some things that I really wanted to expand my scope or have my say or have some instruments and some new gadgets, which I just was not able to expand my scope because, you know, when you work for someone else, you're always constantly trying to fight a battle. Can I get this? Can I get that? And the answer almost always every time is, you know, no, you know, it's not in the it's not in the practice budget, you know. And then comes the second question is about mentoring. I always was very, very keen, and I'm still very, very keen to always get mentored by clinicians who are better than me and surround myself with clinicians who are better than me just so I can constantly build myself. So when it came to the practice ownership, I realized that, you know, I can be productive as well. I can at the same time, I really want that freedom. I want the passive income at the same time. So that's when I thought I really want to get into practice ownership. So these were some of the reasons. Of course, when everyone gets into the practice ownership, one of the main reasons sometimes is, of course, financial freedom. You know, you want to have that passive income. But one of the main reasons for me at that time was to be able to basically manage my days, manage my life in the future where I don't have to constantly work 6 days a week. There's some passive income going, but at the same time, have the liberty to practice the way I want, organize my books the way I want, and not be adhered to the books being made by someone else for me. So then the second question came on, do I want to do that by myself? Or do I want to split that risk? And the answer was fairly simple that I quickly landed that, yes, I would love to split that risk. And that's when I decided to talk to my fellow colleague. So when we were initially looking at business partnership, I always tell other people as well, if you really like someone's work and how they're working, or if they're really productive, but if your ethics don't match, if the trust factor doesn't match, it may not be the right fit. But if your ethics factor matches, you know, you're in sync with your treatment planning, or you both have very, very similar vision down the future, then that's something you should consider when you're looking at practice ownership. So when I came across the two people who were willing to not only split the risk and had similar ethics and similar vision as me, that's when I decided to go to ownership with them, and they decided to go ownership with me, I should say.
It's a very considered process. And what I'm picking up from that is this was not an accident. This was a case of evaluating your values, ethics, outcomes, goals, and making sure that they are in complete alignment with your business partner, which obviously I know you guys, and they are very much in alignment.
Yes.
I guess one of the perceptions out there, and I think a lot of people talk about this, but I don't believe this, is that oral health therapy is not a productive part of a practice. You know, you're hiving off the less productive part of your day, but you're a very productive oral health therapist. And I want to explore that, but I want to explore that from a couple of different perspectives. And I guess the first thing I'd like to explore is the mindset that you've adopted. Have you always been productive in that regard? Because let me rephrase that. Let me explain myself a little bit better.
Sure.
I look at the Facebook groups and I read them, and sometimes I agree with what's said and sometimes I disagree with what's said. And oftentimes I keep my views to myself because on social media, I just try to do that.
Yep.
For some people, they think, you know, why would I hire a therapist versus hiring a dentist because of the scope difference? But I see your production, and I know it's as good as, if not better than, many, many, many associate dentists out there. So I want to just ask about that, the mindset attached to that, the type of work you do around that, and how you've kind of brought that into the practice?
So, look, initially, prior to joining the program, of course, with Savvy Dentist, I was having a lot of mixed days. Some days I would be producing a lot, and then other days I would be producing very, very minimal, you know, where I would not even consider that as a production at all. You know, I always had a mindset, a week averaged out, not too bad, or a month sort of averaged out, not too bad. Yeah. And that was sort of a wrong mindset. Once I joined the program, there were some goals set up that minimum, let's try to hit this, because Sahil, like my coach, for example, initially, they mentioned to me, look, Sahil, you've hit this much on that day. Why didn't you hit it on that day? And it got me thinking, you're right. Why didn't I hit it on that day? And then I started doing something which I never used to do in my life, which is basically preset appointment books. I had never done that in the past. And as a result, that's why the production always varied. So since I introduced the production, the high production slots and preset bookings, I noticed that the consistency of the production changed dramatically.
Right.
The other mindset I had to change was not just mine, but my front desk staff, because what initially started happening was if a patient really wanted to be seen, they would take out the high production slot, replace that with the two recalls, right? And that's where half the problem lies. So that's when I have to sit down with them, explain to them why the reasoning behind that is happening. So I guess when it comes to the production, what I do on a day-to-day basis, I guess you're asking me about that, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So I always have basically two minimum high production slots in a day. Yeah. That's how book structure sort of pans out. So if I'm looking at my normal book structure, I'd have two perio cases at least a day I'd be doing.
Yep.
Previously, I used to just do periodontal treatment by its own. Yep. Now I try to do periodontal treatment plus restorative if possible, if the condition allows it. And if you just talk basic numbers, say, for example, if you're charging $250 per quadrant and you're doing two quadrants for periodontal treatment, that's $500 for that particular appointment.
Yep.
And if you incorporate two restorations at the same time, if it's occlusals, for example, then you're looking at extra $180 or $150 per. So that ends up being about $700-$800 worth of production in a matter of an hour or 70 minutes.
Wow, that's fantastic.
When you do two of those high production slots in a day, that's already close to about $1,800-$1,900. The rest of the day, you can really span out for your new patient bookings and your recalls.
Yeah.
So when you set your books in such a way where you have to have a new patient in the morning, a new patient in the afternoon, and an emergency slot just before lunch, and two high production slots. So very, very similar. I mean, can be different structures. You soon enough realize that you don't have to do anything. Your production goal reaches. So a production goal of, for example, $3,000 as an OHT would be a reasonable one if you're doing it in such a way. And it's quite achievable. And I know many, many OHTs who produce even a lot more than that on a daily basis. It's not unheard of. I guess one question which I might answer for you, which I know you might be asking me, is what's the difference? Why? How come other OHTs are not doing this?
Yeah, that's right? Something that's on my mind. Yeah, for sure.
So what I normally do with a lot of OHTs when I'm talking to them, and say if we're doing a training program with them, a lot of the answers I hear is, number one, I don't have a DA, Sahil. I don't have a dental assistant. And as a result, when I need to do some therapy, I have to request a DA. It's too much hassle. And the DA then is not available when I'm about to do a filling. Sometimes I have to do a filling by myself. As a result, I just palm off all my restoratives off to the associate.
Yep.
But there's a downside to that. And I'm going to go a little bit into the mathematics part of it.
Yeah, please do.
This might make a little bit more sense for practice owners. So if you have an OHT, let's say, if they're working at a very, very standard pace, or if they're working at a slow pace, even let's say they're doing 60-minute appointment slots and they're seeing 8 patients a day.
Yep.
And then they don't have a DA. If you just provide them a DA and cut that appointment time by 10 minutes, which is achievable.
Yes.
Then after about 5 or 6 patients, you've got an extra new patient slot.
Yep.
That extra new patient slot will pay you $250, $300 for that new patient slot. That's effectively paid off your DA for the day.
Yes, indeed.
And you haven't even gone through half the day.
And you now have the opportunity to do more high productive stuff than the other appointments, right?
Exactly right. So the DA itself is paid off. Plus, don't forget that dental assistant is not just going to be with your OHT. They're going to be doing other work as well. They're going to be looking after stereo. They're going to help you out in other regions. They might help you with stocking if you have an FTA or UTA. And plus, that OHT will be more motivated to start booking more appointments with them when it comes to high productions. Next thing was, initially, just like myself, lacked confidence when it came to initial restoratives. So when I sat down with my mentor, we agreed that I'm going to start with occlusals, class ones. Then I'll slowly build on to class threes and class fives. Then I'll tackle class twos.
Yep.
Once the speed builds up, once the confidence builds up between yourself and your mentor, that mindset changes with the mentor. Next time the mentor is going to have a look, they're going to see, you know what, this patient only needs three restoratives. I want to send these three restorations to XYZ.
Yep.
I'm going to focus on that patient who has been on the wait list to get three crowns with me.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, within a few weeks, what will happen is your dentist's books will be filled with, you know, your indirect restorations, your high productions. And then sooner or later, the OHT will be doing most of the restorative work at the same time practice. Yeah. Right? At the same time, hygiene is being carried out. But the main mistake that constantly was being made by myself was not adhering to those preset blocks, which changed my life once I started doing that. It sounds simple, but I cannot stress enough on it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's simple to understand, but not always easy to do. And the question that first comes to mind is how you worked with your receptionist to respect the structure of the appointment book. I'm just curious to understand how that conversation went, what happened. And I guess what I'm understanding is the consistency of billings now. Because I imagine you're billing fairly consistently, not good days, bad days kind of thing. And what's been the impact of that consistency? What's that allowed you as a business owner to do to know that, you know, I can reasonably expect to bill X dollars per day?
Yeah. So let's put it this way. Initially, I used to work 6 days a week at the practice and I was billing $10,000 less than what I am right now. And now I'm working 4 days.
Oh, wow.
A week. Nice. But I'm billing 10,000 more a month
than
what previously was, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. So the conversation that I had to have with the front desk was about production and explaining to them what an average production for my day should be daily.
Yeah.
And I actually gave them clear-cut numbers. Now, reception girls are very, very smart. They know exactly what to do once you get them on board and you give them the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
For example, if I give them daily goals, say, look, my daily goal for the day is $3,000. If I'm going to be replacing this big high production slot with something else, they know exactly what to book for. I'll give you an example of what happened last week. I had a big cancellation of a 30-minute appointment.
Yeah.
Without even asking me, the girls were very switched on. They had a patient who needed a few restorations, and the treatment plan for that was close to roughly $1,100 for that particular appointment. But that patient was booked a week later. So what they decided to do was, instead of going to cancellation list, they got that patient from the next week a week earlier, just to make sure that the daily limit is reached for that production goal.
Yep.
Number one. Number two, what that did was, the next week's appointment, we could either fill it up with the cancellation list because we had 6 days notice, roughly, or by then it would have been booked with either new patients or emergencies.
Nice.
Whereas on the day itself, that would not have been possible. You're just relying on phone call to ring, and, you know, in a matter of 2 hours, you can't have a patient come in and your high production slot would have gone waste. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So some of these things, to getting the receptionist on board really, really helped. Now, those production goals are very clear for every single receptionist. They know exactly what my production goal is, what the other two associate dentist production goal is. And since then, they've been on board. So one of the things that I learned from the Savvy Dentist seminars was giving ownership to the dental nurses and your staff. So previously, they used to ask me a problem, Sahil, you know, this is a problem, what should I do? And then we implemented this strategy where you would ask them, you know, what do you think we should do?
Mm.
You give me, how about you go back and come back with three solutions for me? and we'll talk about those. So we started implementing these things. Initially, I thought, well, you know, what are you talking about? That's surely not going to work. You know, it doesn't work, these small things, but they do. Believe me, they do. Now, something goes wrong. This reception comes to me with a solution. Half the time, solution is done. They come and present to me, I did this, Sahil. Is that okay?
Oh, wow. Oh, isn't that music to your ears as a business owner?
Brilliant. I'll be with a patient. I will be the patient, for example. Then a patient is sitting in the rubber dam, and I look up at my appointment book, and the afternoon is gone. There's cancellation. I blink my eye, I look around, come back half an hour later, the appointment finished. That appointment slot is already filled with another high production. I didn't have to go outside.
Yep.
I didn't have to say anything to anyone. The front desk already knew it, what to do.
There's so many things in there, mate. I really love how you've trained your team. And I know you guys as business owners invest heavily in training your team and you put a lot of work into that. And clearly it's paid off. Just for other business owners listening to this and thinking about how to train their team, what sort of tips, hints, strategies might you offer anyone listening to this as they go about training their team and thinking, yeah, how do I create a team that can think for themselves? How do I create, like, because there'll be people listening to this saying, I want a team. I want a team like that, right? I want staff that fill my appointment book like that. I don't want to have to, you know, tell them. I want them to just know and do. I know you said giving ownership and getting the three solutions, and that's terrific. What other things have you done to build that? And I'm really aware that you guys are good at this. This is a bit of a superpower of yours.
Yeah. Okay. So look, first of all, a lot of training modules are available on even Savvy Dentist program and whatnot. Everything is available out there. Even if it's not available on Savvy Dentist, there's tons of things available everywhere. But it comes down to how do you motivate your staff to actually do them?
Yeah.
And if they're doing it, are they just sitting in front of the computer and pretending to do it, or are they really interested? That's what it comes down to. And I guess it's just human nature. Let me put it to you, for example, if you are equally qualified as me, for example, which I know you're not, you're next level.
I think you might be more qualified than me these days, mate. It's all good.
Pushing buttons there. No, so let's say, for example, if you and me are on the same level and we're equally qualified, we've done the same degree, or we fall under the same award category, let's say, in the page. Now, when I meet you and you tell me that, oh, look, I'm getting paid X amount and my workplace, you know, every time this happens, we'll jump on it. We work like a team. It's really fun environment. And, you know, just by doing that, you know, what happens end of every month, we get to go out and we get to celebrate and everyone else to celebrate. And, you know, my boss, for example, really looks after us for doing this. And you come home to think to yourself, geez, they're doing so well. Why am I not doing so well?
Mm.
What are we doing wrong? So that's human nature. It's a competition. At the end of the day, you want to perform really well. So what happened was initially, and I'll tell you how this whole staffing issue started. Initially, the staff obviously was not on board with a lot of the training. But since we brought them to the face-to-face seminar, which goes for the intensive two-day workshops, where they met other practice managers and they met other admin staff and they met other nurses, dental nurses, they realized so many things we were not doing as a practice.
Wow.
Right? One of the things was no team lunches. But at the same time, they learned that there were some incentives being offered for doing your KPIs and working accordingly.
Yep.
So half the work for us was done by attending that intensive workshop, for example. So when we were on that flight home, that this is a true conversation, the staff member said that, look, Sahil, I didn't realize that we were meant to do all of this. How come we're not doing all of that? And I said, okay, well, how about you tell me? You tell me what are the reasons behind it? And she said, nothing really. We should start working on this. And those two particular staff members, they came back with those ideas and explore those ideas with the team meeting. And now that's a set standard for a training for any new staff member to be coming on board.
Yeah, wow.
So when those two people, they went with us, they're the front desk staff.
Yep.
The most important people in the whole practice at this stage.
Yep.
So when we got them on board, every single person that was being trained on reception after that thought that was the natural standard, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they knew no better. They knew no better. They knew no different.
Correct. Exactly right. And then after that, that standard module was being followed. Similarly, when we went the next time, the practice manager's similar module started. And when the practice manager realized what other things we could be doing in terms of management, you know, doing your Excel sheets, your daily productions, your monthly productions, your forecasting, where they were not being involved initially at all. But as soon as you get them involved, talk to them on the same level, as we call them the A-team, they realized how important they are part of it as well. So it's a small, I know what I'm saying might sound something really, really small, but I promise you it's a huge, huge difference. It's a huge difference.
I think what you really touched on there, mate, is building this wonderful culture. You've got this great culture at the practice, and your team are engaged. You've got people who are invested, they care, they're interested, they're motivated. They're good at what they do and they want to get better at what they want to do.
Right.
So that they're, you know, trying to be better themselves every day. And that's a really positive environment. You've had mentors, you also mentor other people.
Yes.
And I really believe that mentoring is important. I wanted to ask you, what makes a great mentor and what makes a great mentee?
Okay, I'll give you my example. When I graduated, I was not motivated. I was not keen. I was not even interested in any mentoring or getting mentored by anyone else, simply because I was on an hourly wage.
Yeah.
I was coming. My books were done for me.
Mm.
My books were organized for me. I just had to come and do my work and go home. And that's how it worked. Since then, what happened was one day my previous owner said to me, right, we're going to switch you on to commission and we're going to talk about production. And at the same time, if there's any more help you need, you let me know. I said, okay, that sounds fine. And still that didn't do anything until I decided that, yes, I want to do some more apart from this current perio and hygiene treatment. I want to expand into therapy.
Mm.
So what my previous owner started to do was, you know, how about you come and observe me for a couple of cases and then we'll start giving you some simple cases.
Mm.
So I guess when it comes to the mentorship and menteeship, there has to be a reason why that mentee person wants to be mentored. Mm. Okay. If you're lucky enough to have an or she who is really motivated and, you know, they don't want anything in return, that's great. But not everyone has that.
Mm.
If an OHT is looking to outperform their current performance, they're going to want something in return. They're going to want an incentive.
Yeah.
It's like human nature. If your OHT is on an hourly rate, what if they're performing really well? Is there a sliding scale that you should consider giving them at the end of the month? You know, if you reach that production goal of, say, 45,000 for that month, we can think about switching you to commission for that month or vice versa.
Yep.
Or if they're already on commission, then you can start talking about mentorship as well. And that way, you know, as a mentor, you want to tell them all the learnings you've got, but at the same time, tell them all the mistakes you've made and what they shouldn't make.
Yeah.
So I'm very open about my mistakes. So like, for example, when I take photographs, so so first of all, building the right habit is another thing. So every time I'm mentoring someone, I tell them, you're not allowed to do their restoration without a rubber dam. So you have to build that habit from day one.
Yep.
So small habits like that. And every time I'm mentoring an OHT who is going into a new practice, I tell them the same thing. If they're not doing rubber dam, even if the owner is not doing rubber dam, you have to start rubber dam yourself. If you don't, you're going to build a habit and you're never going to touch it.
Yeah.
Okay. So some of the small habits like that make a huge difference. But as a mentee, what really motivated me, number one, of course, was the right mentor. They were willing to give me time and they were willing to give me the right patience. A lot of the times practice owners or the boss might think, oh, you know what, that might be too hard for them. I'm going to put that in the too hard basket. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe be present for that appointment. If you're free, give them a hard case and be there.
Yeah.
Help them through that appointment. Yes, it's going to cost you money and it may cost you for that half an hour, but that's a return on investment.
Yeah, down the track massively.
Correct. So, and it's always good to start small. For example, if you know you've got a patient who needs PRRs, a few teeth need PRRs, small preventative resin restorations, give those pastels on to the OHT, start them off like that, then build them onto the standard atraumatic non-carious lesions, you know, build their confidence up, and then moving on to class two eventually. And then, you know, your MODs and vice versa. So you're going to, as a mentor, know what your mentee is capable of now. You know, once you know that, once you know you've helped them reach that potential, you're automatically going to palm off all that work, which, you know, you're normally doing at the moment anyway.
I really love this because what we're talking about is investing in the person and helping them in their own development and helping them fulfill their potential. And you've touched on a couple of really important things. One is the inherent drive and motivation, as well as the willingness and openness to learning. And, you know, when those combinations come together, it's really unstoppable. It's a really strong and positive force.
Right.
What's the potential when that happens? Now, we started off this conversation with me saying you're a very productive oral health therapist, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there'll be different definitions of productivity. And as I said at the outset, you know, it saddens me when I hear some practice owners just dismiss out of hand the role of oral health therapy in a practice. Yeah. I think that oral health therapy can play an incredibly important role in practice when it's done well.
Yeah.
I understand when it's done poorly that some people would be reluctant to do it, but I think if we go through this process of mentoring and investing in people, it should be done well. But what I wanted to ask you, when we get this right, you know, roughly what sort of billings do you do on a daily basis?
On an average, the minimum target for a day as an OHT should be about 3,000 per day.
That's minimum, right?
Yeah. So that's, and it's quite achievable.
Yeah.
It's very, very achievable. I know many OHTs, they're doing four and a half
there you go.
Per day. And it may not be consistent, but they're definitely doing at least about four as well.
Yeah.
And very, very similar. They're doing high-end work, they're doing proper work, and they're doing dentistry. It's not rushed. It's nothing that's rushed at all. It's basically starting from simple restorative, then building your pace onto quadrant dentistry.
Yeah.
And that will take time.
Yeah. And that comes back to getting those workflows and getting that right and being efficient with your rubber dam and all of those things that go with it, right?
Correct. And one of the questions that a lot of owners asked me as well was, look, you know what? I'm going to invest all that time and money on this associate or OHT. What if they leave? Then same answer, what you always say, what if you don't train them and they stay?
Yes, indeed. Yep.
So it's a risk you're willing to take. What if you're really good friends with an associate, you think they're never going to leave, and you spend all that money on training. What happens if they leave? Everyone will leave at some stage, but that doesn't mean you don't have to, you know, invest in them or mentor them. You're just setting up a loss for your own business at the end of the day.
My view on this is very much along the lines of, I think we invest in people, we train people. My personal view is people will always move on, and we want them to move on for great reasons.
Correct.
Yeah, maybe they've got their own adventure to pursue or whatever. But my personal perspective is that let's make the time we're here really productive together. Let's invest in them. Let's let them fulfill their potential. And it's a win-win situation that, you know, they win, the practice wins, the patients win, everyone wins. If you could, I guess, whisper into the ears of practice owners and say, hey, maybe you need to think about X, Y, or Z, or think about this, that, or the other. What sort of things would you say to practice owners who might be thinking about, you know, should I hire an associate? Should I hire an OHT? Does it have to be one or the other? Can or should it be both? I mean, I know there's going to be, you know, situations where one's going to be more appropriate than the other, but I just would love to get your perspective because you're uniquely positioned as the OHT and the business owner. And I'd just love to get your insight on that.
Depends on a lot of things, on the demographic of the practice, the socioeconomic of the patients attending that in the area, and the age group or your target audience in that area. It depends a lot. So if you're in an area where you have a lot of children's dentistry, an OHT would perform really well, or you have a high volume of perio and kids dentistry or children's dentistry, you know an OHT would do really, really well. But if you're just purely looking at the production side of things, then I guess you could mentor both.
Yeah.
Correct? Yes, the associate will always be more and more productive because they have a wider scope. They can go into indirect restoration and vice versa. That will always, always be the case. But then you're still going to train your associate, right? So why not invest that time and money into an OHT and then do some of the work. And that's this way you actually get to keep all the high-end work to yourself as well.
Yeah. Well, just on that though, when we're talking about OHTs billing, you know, $3,000, $3,500, $4,000, $4,500 a day, I know plenty of associate dentists that don't bill that. And so I think you're right. They do have a scope of practice. Associates have a scope of practice that, you know, by definition is broader than that of an OHT.
Yeah.
But that doesn't always translate to being, them being productive with that scope of work. I would rather have a really productive OHT than an unproductive therapist every day of the week.
Yeah, I guess that's the same with associate as well.
Of course, of course, indeed. So a productive associate is always better than an unproductive one. I totally agree.
Yeah.
So we've covered a lot of territory. I just wanted to ask you, really, I guess, lessons that you've learned, advice that you might offer, and anything else you think is relevant to the audience listening?
The number one question I get asked is, how does it actually work, the OHT dentist partnership in a business? You know, there's going to be always a difference in production with the dentist and OHT, most of the time will be. So how did it actually work? So I always tell them one simple answer. If you were to start up a business, not dental, let's say you opened a restaurant, and none of you guys were chefs at all.
Yep.
Basically going into one risk, which is the financial risk.
Yep.
So when you look at a dental business in a way, if you're going as a business with partners, you're sharing that risk of finance. If the practice doesn't work, then you both have to return that money. So business side is very different to clinician side and production side.
Yep.
If the dentist is producing more, they're taking home more as well. Your expenses are also more at the same time. But just because you're in an equal partnership in a business doesn't mean you have to be in same percentage or same commission while you're working in a practice. So let's say if you're dentist OHT business partners, 50-50.
Yep.
But when it comes to actually seeing the patient, the dentist might be on 45% and the OHT might decide to pay themselves 35%. Or 40%.
Yeah.
You know, just to help out so that at the end of the day, when the money comes down to the business pot, after all the expenses, there's a fair share happening from both sides, if that makes sense. This way, the dentist is being remunerated more for doing more as well. They're in a higher percentage too. So there's always different things that can be discussed. Or you could be on equal partnership and equal pay structure that you're paying yourselves, but then the person who's producing more decides to take over more roles, which is training staff,
yeah,
you know, and doing more behind the scenes work than the other partner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So just to summarize, you could have each of the clinicians, dentists and OHT, taking their commission or salaries or whatever in different amounts based on their production and contribution financially to the practice. Yeah. But then the business profit itself is divided, you know, 50-50 potentially. Yep, that's the way that works. And I think this is a really important point you just raised. And I want to just highlight it, mate, because I think, again, I definitely don't want to gloss over it. There are many ways to add value to the business that go beyond revenue generation. And you've just touched on training the team. And, you know, when we hear about your team and what your reception staff and your support team do for you and the dentists and the whole clinical team at the practice there.
Yes.
That's a really important role because it actually pays dividends. It actually facilitates the earning of the income because, as you said, you know, if that high production slot had fallen out and was replaced with, you know, a mishmash of stuff, that has a cost. So it makes sense to reward someone for the training roles that they do and the impact that it has. So, yeah, I love that, mate. I really appreciate you saying that because it's important.
I know so many OHTs that are working with dentists in partnership and they're producing really, really well on a daily basis that the dentists, so many times the dentists have now offered them to buy into practice.
Yeah, wow.
They say, okay, you know, how about we give you a 20% stake in the practice? Would you be interested in buying in? And you know what that does? It shows the associate or the OHT that, yes, I'm being valued here. And the owner knows now that I've spent so much money training this person. I know now they're going to stick by me for a very, very long time. The point I'm trying to make is if you really, really enjoy working with someone, you know they have the potential to be productive and you know they can be productive, train them, but at the same time, give them a reason to stay in the practice.
Yeah.
So whether it's financial incentive or whether it's mentorship incentive, whatever it is, that's what you have to figure out.
Yeah, I love it. I think you're right because, you know, if you're investing that much time, effort and energy into those people, and as we said a little while ago, you know, if people are going to leave, we want to leave for good reasons, but we also want to give them good reasons to stay too, right? And that's so right. And that makes total sense. So, Hill, any other final words of advice, any tips, any lessons learned that you want to share?
I think, to be honest with you, that in the ongoing field of dentistry, there's many ways to utilize OHTs. Mm. And it's not just in general dentistry. As you can see, the model works great with orthodontists nowadays as well. You can see how many orthodontists are working with OHTs. So there's plenty of ways to work with OHTs in that model. It's about having the right mindset, and that mindset does need to change slowly, and it's changing slowly as well. It will take time, but just, you know, be patient. Similar with OHT, just like you are with any other associate, I guess.
Love it. It's really interesting, actually. Just on a side note, one of our clients is an endodontist who works with an OHT, and that has had a huge and positive impact in his practice as well. So. Yes. Lots of roles. And I think you're only limited by your imagination, right? I think there's so many ways to work together. And what I really love about you guys and your business is the business collaboration, coming together of two minds, coming together of, you know, similar values, similar ethos, similar everything has really led to, I think, an incredible practice, very successful practice. And, you know, I really want to salute you guys for that, because, you know, you've done a wonderful job. I'm really, really pleased to see it flying so well. So hats off to you.
And I think hats off to you, Jesse. Half the work is done on your behalf. We just take the credit.
Well, very kind. I don't think it's quite that. I appreciate the compliment, but I think you guys are the ones doing the push-up. So from all of us here, I just want to take a moment to express my thanks to you for being so open, for being so transparent, because I think this is a really important topic that probably gets glossed over or maybe, you know, doesn't always get the detail, and you've been really transparent and open and really wanting to share. So from all of us here, mate, thank you very much indeed. You're a good man.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.